to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, my name is Zachary Smith. I am your host for today, and hopefully going forward for an indeterminable amount of time. So as I said last week, if you're already sick of me, sorry. If you like me, awesome. And once again, here on iTunes, not only for my show, but for all of our shows, if you could take the time to subscribe, if you could rate us on iTunes, that does help a lot. Something with the iTunes algorithm that really values those ratings. And once again, I am beyond honored to be here. And I do say that every week, but it's because it's true. I'm a guy who has loved wrestling for as long as I can remember. And I'd done a couple guest appearances on a couple podcasts and always wanted to start my own and never really got around to it. And thankfully, I was on Matt's a couple times, and then he offered me this spot, and hopefully I've been doing a great job for you guys. I put a lot of work into this to make sure that I'm providing you the best content that I can, not only for myself, but this entire unofficial WWE podcast network, as is Matt and Aiden, everybody here. And we're going to go ahead and get started. And while I am honored to be your host, it's a little bit hard for me this week because, as you know, we cover the news in wrestling. And there's really two things that have happened. One, the Dark Side of the Ring for Vice came out, the season 2 finale of Owen Hart. And that was a beautifully tragic episode. It was extremely well done. It's probably the best one that they've done, and certainly the most heart-wrenching. And on a lot of podcasts, that's been the big story. And I certainly don't blame any podcast for that being the big story. And something that I think got overshadowed just because of timing is Shaq Gaspard. Formerly in WWE, he's a member of Crime Time, and before I get started, I do just want to say that this is not because Shad passed away, but it is the truth. It's that Crime Time was one of my favorite tag teams, and you can question the fact that they were given the gimmick that they were of two African-American guys that stole stuff, but with a lot of gimmicks like that, with great performers like Shad and JTG, they made the most of it and then some. They were often the most entertaining part of the show that they were on, whether they were in the back with Shawn Michaels and Triple H of D-Generation X, or scalping tickets, or teaming up with John Cena to trash JBL's limo. Anything. And Shad eventually turned on JTG, and I thought we were going to have a big monster heel on our hands, and unfortunately it didn't quite work out that way. But I'm sure you know, but if you don't, and I do want to try and make sure I get the details as correct as I can, there's still some things coming out. Basically, Shad and his son, and I don't recall if his wife was there or not, but they were, I believe, in Venice Beach, or certainly at the beach. And Shad and his son were enjoying the beach as any father and son would. There's a picture of both of them kind of flexing on the beach before everything happened. That's a beautiful picture of a father and son, but also a tragic picture because from reports, it appears that a rip current came in and as you know, if that happens, it's a situation where you're pulled out and there's not a lot you can do about it. And they were both basically stranded out there, and rescue workers came out, and Shad and his son were both there. And as far as we know, the last words that Shad said to anybody on this earth is he demanded that the rescue workers save his son first. And I am not a father. This is the ultimate father move you hear a lot about. When you love somebody, you're willing to sacrifice everything for them. You're willing to die for them. And while I am 100% sure that that is true for most, if not all, parents, it's really where you find out when you're put in a situation like this and you're going to die a horrible death. And his first words were still, "No, not me. Save my son. Not me." And his son was thankfully saved. And Shad was carried out to sea. And I have to give a shout out to my wonderful mother, who not only raised me, but taught me just about everything good that I know, including my sense of humor that I hope you enjoy here. And I found out earlier that my mother has an alert on her phone for any time wrestling news comes up, and she does that so that she can tell me, because she is by far my biggest fan. She demands me to send the podcast as soon as it's done, gives me notes on it, ways to improve, tells me she loves it. She's biased, but I'll still take it. And she's the one that sent me this story. And Shad was out swimming with his 10-year-old son. And as I said, his son is safe, thankfully. And his wife is safe, thankfully. But news was coming out kind of staggered in terms of he got carried out, and then they're still searching for him, and then search looks like it's going to be called off, and then a body is identified as somebody who matches his description, and finally that was identified as Shad, who was 39 years old. And it's one of those situations, I can only imagine his family, who everybody at the unofficial WWE podcast, our thoughts and our hearts are with them through this ridiculously terrible time. But for wrestling fans, and I didn't know there were so many Crime Time fans until everyone started reminiscing and posting their videos, and I couldn't watch a lot of them without getting emotional. And that video when Kofi won the WWE Championship at WrestleMania, there was a clip of MVP and Shad. I forget if they were at a bar or whatever, but they were reacting to it, and they were both emotional, and it was a beautiful video even before all this. And I think that a sacrifice like that, and what I can only describe as the ultimate act of bravery, it's even more so than taking a bullet to me, because you know that if you're not saved right then, that there's a chance you're not going to be saved. And seems like Shad didn't even think twice. And again, this is a 39-year-old man who died. And I want to say he was body scanned for the inspiration for Kratos from God of War. He was made a cameo in the Birds of Prey movie. He had been doing a lot of other projects. This was a guy who could have come back to WWE, but even if he never did, he had the brightest of futures ahead of him, and I sincerely believe that he would have been a big star. It was just a matter of time. And as news was filtering out, a lot of wrestling fans, while we in the back of our heads knew that it was very, very unlikely that he was ever going to be found, hoping against hope, I remember everybody, including myself on Twitter, just saying, "Shad, please be okay." And a lot of times when there's situations like this, a lot of people just pay lip service to it, but this wasn't one of those times. It was sincerely everybody just pleading with him, with, if you believe in a higher power with the ocean, just to please let Shat be okay. Because in a business that can have people that are selfish and not good people, as with any walk of life, what I've learned is that Shad was one of the great ones. And not just because of what happened here. Every story on every podcast, video, tweet, news article that I have heard is that everybody has a similar experience with Shad. He was always all smiles. They were always genuine. He would recognize people that just made videos about wrestling and make them feel comfortable when they were at functions. And he mentored a lot of people in the wrestling industry and made sure that they had the foundation they needed and would follow up with people that were starting, like, hey, keep pushing, don't give up, keep going. And you see somebody like that, and you see something where he could be a trainer, he could be a motivational guy, he could be in, you know, NXT, kind of similar to how Shawn Michaels is, and those new people can kind of siphon off knowledge from him, and all of his movie deals and everything that he was doing there. Like I said, there was such a bright future there that was snuffed out because of a freak accident. And while I imagine that there is some closure to finally knowing what happened to him for his family and friends, it doesn't make it any less hard. And again, I am feeling 1.0000000 of the amount that his friends and family are feeling, but there's only been a few times in my wrestling life that I've been uncontrollably emotional at somebody passing from the wrestling business. One was Eddie Guerrero. I found out, I believe, on Raw when the graphic came up, and I didn't know. And I was at my parents' house, and I had to go into the restroom and just bawled crying. And I at first didn't know why it was hitting me so hard, and it's because as a fan, I loved Eddie. And this is another one where, as a fan, I loved Shad. I was constantly refreshing every news site and Twitter feeds just to try and get some information while knowing inevitably what this was going to be, but you hope against hope because not only is it a human life, but he was one of the great people that came out of wrestling. It's so rare to find somebody that you don't hear a bad story about. And I was looking through even before all this happened, and there are no negative stories about him as a person. And again, from everybody here, the unofficial WWE podcast, I can't express our sorrows and the fact that our hearts and minds and go out to his family and friends at this time. And the whole wrestling world is in mourning, not only because we're remembering Owen Hart, but to me, it's Shad. I spent so much time with Crime Time that I loved them as people. And to see a guy like that snuffed out, and he his last act on this planet was to tell rescue workers, please save my son first. And I can only say that if I am half the man that he is by the time everything is said and done for me, I will have done something right. And all I can say is rest in peace to Shad. And all the best to his family, his friends, JTG, his brother. And I will not forget Shad the same way that I will not forget Eddie, and I will not forget all the great people from wrestling that give their bodies and times and sweat, blood, and tears to entertain us. And again, he was one of the good ones, and we need more of those. And unfortunately, I have to do a kind of rough transition here because we're going to talk about NXT from this week. It was a very good show in some parts, a very interesting show, if you by now know my tastes, that we'll talk about. And I thought it was great that before NXT started, before that WWE intro video started, popped up a graphic the same way it did with Eddie, the same way it did with everyone who's passed away in wrestling, where it was in memory of Shad. And that's when it really hit me that he was 39 years old. But we're going to do our best to talk about the show here. And we start with the entrance of Karrion Kross and Scarlett. And I've said this before, but this entrance is so great. It showcases Scarlett really well as the manager, and it showcases Karrion Kross as a monster very well. It almost feels like Aleister Black's entrance, but cranked up to 100. Aleister Black is one of my favorite entrances in WWE. But Karrion Kross's entrance and Scarlett's is something else, man. It really has an ominous feel, and it really gets you ready for the trail of death and destruction that they're about to lay down. And there's an enhancement talent in the ring. I'm very sorry I didn't catch his name during the broadcast, but they use, looks like smoke machines during his entrance. And the really cool thing is that once the bell rings, there's still smoke in the ring. And that not only adds to the entrance, obviously, but it creates kind of an ambiance and an ominous nature to his matches. And as you would expect, this is just a beatdown by Karrion Kross. It's some suplexes, and he's throwing the guy around the ring, beating him down, and then he locks in his submission. And I didn't catch the name of, but he wins by submission again. And this serves well to build Karrion Kross up. Obviously, he's going to start with Ciampa, which is a huge step, and he's in the main event, but it's important with a character like this to have enhancement matches so that it really gets across not only some of their moves so that you get familiar with them if you haven't seen them before, but just that they're monsters and that they're going to be very hard to deal with. And then when he faces Ciampa, hopefully it's Ciampa gets some things in and Kross can still look like a monster. And they're celebrating in the ring. And then Ciampa's music hits. So Ciampa is back from that attack. I like that they waited a while and that he had to, you know, go home for a bit in storyline because he was messed up. And Ciampa starts on the ramp and he's walking down slowly and he says, "Allow me to officially introduce myself." And he's pointing around. He says, "This, all this, that ring that you're standing in, I own it. But you already knew that. That's why you attacked me to make a point." He's starting to get towards the ring and on the apron. He says, "In a locker room full of the absolute best in the world, your entrance is special, your presence is special, you are special." A little detail that I absolutely loved is that by this point, Ciampa is on the apron, and Kross and Scarlett are still in the ring, but on the far side on the ropes. And Scarlett walks over and sits on the ropes the way a manager often does and holds the rope open for Ciampa. I love that detail. I haven't seen it for at least a very long time. It's inviting him in. It's like, if you think you can do something here against my monster, please be my guest. Scarlett's going to be really good as a manager, I think. And then Ciampa gets in the ring. He says, "You know who else is special? Me. That's why I had to come out here and look you in the eyes. Because June 7th at TakeOver in your house, it's going to be Ciampa versus Kross." He says, "That is special. Welcome to the main event." And that was just such a great promo. From Ciampa's perspective, it gets over Ciampa as somebody who is a fighting babyface against this monster heel. He's not going to back down. He's not going to cut a promo from the entrance ramp. He's going to get in the ring, get in your face, and then we'll see what's up. And from the perspective of Karrion Kross, this promo is putting Karrion Kross over. He says, "Your entrance is spectacular. You are special. And he says, this match is going to be the main event. And he says, welcome to the main event. I can't think of a better way to cut that promo to not only make himself look strong, but make Karrion Kross look strong and look like the beast that he should be and is. And I've been thinking about it, and Ciampa at that point leaves the ring, and there's a bit of a stare down. I'm torn whether... My first reaction is that it's weird that Karrion Kross didn't attack him, that he just stood there, listened, and then let Ciampa leave the ring. I'm torn whether that's bad, or my thinking now is that Ciampa appealed to Scarlett and Karrion's ego. Said you're special, gave him a match that he clearly wanted. And so maybe it was a matter of maybe a begrudging respect, or at least I'll let you survive until now because at TakeOver I'm going to take you out, and I don't want to take you out until I'm on the biggest stage that I can be. That's where I am with it right now. So I think it was okay that he didn't attack him like you would normally see. And we cut from that, and we get a recap of the Cruiserweight tournament so far. And tonight it's going to be Drake Maverick facing Kushida, and El Hijo del Fantasma, nailed that name, versus Akira Tozawa. And Fantasma and Tozawa is first. It's funny to me that Tozawa has been presented as such a badass and a fighter thus far on NXT, but then he's been on the main roster a couple times as an enhancement talent. It's so weird that they can't find anybody else so that we can continue this story and suspend our disbelief, but pal, we gotta get somebody in here to put him over. Get that small Tozawa guy. Sure, Vince, we'll do that. And they're having a really good back-and-forth match. Phantasma has wanted to come to WWE for a long time since he was King Cuerno in Lucha Underground. And it shows that he seems to love being there, and it's a really good back and forth, and Tozawa hits the top rope senton, but Phantasma rolls out of the ring, which is really smart. I love that detail of he had just enough to get out of the ring because he was already in the corner. Tozawa throws him back in the ring, but by that point he's only able to get a two count. I like that psychology, you know, that way he doesn't just kick out of the senton. It keeps the senton strong and allows Phantasma to kick out, but adds to the drama of the match. Phantasma's going for the Phantom Driver where he has him on his shoulders, but Tozawa turns it into an octopus stretch while he's still on his shoulders. And then Phantasma is finally able to muscle him back up and out of the octopus and hits the Phantom Driver for the win. So Phantasma now leads the pack from Group B at 2-1 and will compete in the finals. So really good match, and really showcased both of them. And the right man won. I think Tozawa's done a fantastic job in this tournament, but I think you're trying to make a new star in Phantasma, and this is a really good way to do it in a tournament setting. And then Mia Yim is out. And she's going one-on-one with Santana Garrett. And for the life of me, gun to my head, could not tell you what her gimmick is, her character is, or anything she likes or dislikes. She's just a person who seems real excited to be there. That is no slight to Santana Garrett, the performer. That is a slight to Santana Garrett, the character, and more so the way that she's been presented, which is to say she hasn't. And I understand you can't focus on everybody every show, but it's always going to mean more when I know something about the character. But unfortunately, we didn't get that, so Santana is essentially an enhancement talent. And Mia Yim hits the Dragon Suplex into the Protect Your Neck finish, which is like an eek defeat, but while your opponent is on their knees, so it's less impact. And Mia Yim fight. Guys, Mia Yim won a match. You guys. I don't remember the last time she won a match. She hadn't done it in a while. You guys, she did it. You guys, she did it. It occurs to me that I don't like the name of her finisher. I don't know why. I don't know. It fits with what the move is, but I don't know. It's weird hearing Mauro say, "Me I am with the protect the neck." It's weird. It's just weird. And then, as their music playing, Gargano and Candice LeRae interrupt. They're both putting her down, and Candice says, "Congrats on the win, sweetie. But isn't that what you were supposed to do against Charlotte Flair for, you know, the NXT Women's title? Because you dropped the ball because you were busy pandering and being handed things." It's just such a great, slimy heel jerk promo. She says, "All because you were too busy pandering to them," as she gestures with her face to the crowd that is not there. It occurs to me that it's so weird that AEW figured out so quickly that they needed wrestlers and or staff at ringside, at least somebody, so that there's some noise to react to and gesture to. For the life of me, I have no idea why WWE hasn't come to that conclusion yet, because performers are still going to have the instinct to play to a crowd, and a lot of people have adjusted, but there's still moments where people are gesturing to a crowd that isn't there. And for heels, it helps having at least some boos in the crowd for heat, and for babyfaces when they're doing their comeback, it really takes a lot away when there's not anybody cheering. You would think that given that they've already taken some stuff from AEW, that they would have come to the conclusion that maybe, just maybe, we should have some people in the crowd. But they didn't. Still quiet. So that's cool. And Mia Yim kicks Gargano as he's outside the ring, and Candice LeRae is in the ring. She charges at Candice, but Johnny pulls the ropes down, and she falls out of the ring. And I like that, because they're heels. They're going to find underhanded ways to do stuff. And I like that Johnny didn't get physical with Mia Yim. He shouldn't. But that he pulled the rope down to cause her to fall out of the ring. So he's helping his wife. I really like that. And then, as they are together in real life, Keith Lee comes out to help Mia Yim. And the heels run off. And that's perfect. That's what I want him to do. And I think Candice was saying, like, under her breath, "No thanks, we're good. No thanks, we're good." Which is great. And they're scurrying to the back as Mia Yim and Keith Lee just stare at them. So it seems like we're setting up for a mixed tag match, which should be interesting. I thought it was going to be Mia, Candice, and then Keith Lee, Gargano. But it, at least right now, looks like it's just one match. And I imagine that at some point, Gargano, maybe they win and Gargano gets a shot at the NXT North American title. That seems like what's coming next, but we'll see. And then we have a Drake Maverick promo in the back, or an interview rather. It's a great promo by him. This story is still gross. Still gross. Because he's fighting for his job when he already got released, and then put out a Twitter video with his honest feelings, and they turn it into a story. Gross. But I really like Drake Maverick. I'm glad that after finally firing him, they decided to put him in the ring to see what he can do. And what do you know? He's a good wrestler. And then Roderick Strong is out for his match with resident NXT psychopath Dexter Lumis. And Bobby Fish and Adam Cole are out with him walking him down. And Adam Cole's cutting a little mini promo just at the camera, saying that he's the longest reigning NXT champ and he's coming up on a year with the title. And they dap him up and they go back, and Roderick Strong goes in and finishes his entrance. As he's walking in, Roderick Strong says, "Oh, Dexter, you big creepy dork," which is simultaneously bad writing and hilarious. That there's this psychotic, maybe killer, maybe not, probably more likely than not that he is as a character. And you're calling him a big, creepy dork. He's big, he's creepy, he's not a dork. And Dexter Lumis is out next. During his entrance, Lumis slides into the ring under the bottom rope, kind of like how Edge did or John Cena did. But he stays with his stomach down because then he arm walks across the ring at Roderick Strong, and Strong jumps out of the ring. Dexter's so creepy, you guys. Dexter's so creepy, and I love it so much. It gave me the same reaction as, like, when you see something gross where you kind of recoil. And I loved it, and I would never have thought of it, but just arm crawling across the ring is such a creepy and aggressive creepy thing to do, and I love it. And then Dexter's walking around, and he's staring at Roderick Strong. WWE, when he was coming in, must have just seen his eyes while he wasn't smiling one time and decided that that needed to be a big part of his character, because his stare is so intense. It scared me through the TV screen, and I didn't even have to fight him. I'm gonna be honest, if I had to fight him, because you guys know, you've seen NXT, you know I fight anybody. I've proven that. You put me in there with Dexter Lumis. My music is going to play, but you're not going to see me. Guarantee you that. I'm going to be at home practicing quarantine. Or at least that's what I'm going to tell them. Because there's no way I'm walking in there with a dude that just hides places waiting to get into fights and stares at me creepily. And did you guys see him arm walk across the ring? That was gross. No. 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 And as they're going on, Roderick Strong keeps bailing out of the ring, which, again, I would say that I would do that as well. But again, and again, you guys know I'm a fighting guy in this industry, but I would do that as well. I would get out of the ring and get under the ring and set off a smoke bomb when he comes down there, and then run to the back and get in my car and drive, go to the airport if they're open, and then fly to a different country, get to that country, purchase a bunker, dig it underground, get in a bunker like I'm waiting for nuclear fallout, and I would still have to have a weapon on me and check behind every corner, because somehow this creepy dude with his eyes would find me. That's what I would do. I don't know about you. And Strong is hitting him, and when you hit Dexter Lumis, he doesn't sell it like it hurts, like most wrestlers do. He sells it like he's mad at his own face for getting punched. Like, he's a really good seller in the ring. He sells everything beautifully, but he doesn't sell like he's in tremendous pain and, oh, how am I going to go on? He sells like, this is annoying. I do not enjoy this sensation. And frankly, I am upset with myself that I allowed myself to get punched in myself, and I am mad at whatever limb of myself for getting attacked. And the match is going on, and Dexter is taking a lot of it. He's so physical in the ring. Obviously, everybody is physical. It's a physical sport. But he is... Everything that he does seems like it hits home. You can't see through it, as a lot of people would say. It seems like he's laying it in a bit, which is absolutely fine. A lot of people prefer that style. And it really cuts across that he's just here to hurt people. And that's really cool. And it's completely different from, say, Karrion Kross, who's a monster. It's in a completely different presentation, because you really think that Dexter is an insane person that really just wants to be here to hurt people. And that's why he hides in the crowd or under the ring, just because he's waiting for his opportunity to hurt somebody. Not me. I'm in a bunker in Mexico. Don't tell him I'm in Mexico. Don't be a snitch. But other people. And Strong kind of ties Lumis's legs up and gets a quick three count. Huh. Now, I paused it here because my first reaction was, what are you doing? Why would you have him lose? And I had to go and run some errands and really think about it. And I'm not sure that I would say I'm okay with it. But in WWE, for them, it's not about wins and losses. Although it is. That's, if there's no point in wins and losses, why do you have a winner and a loser? There's no participation trophies in wrestling. But WWE wants to tell a story. And if I put my mind into that perspective, I can see why this works. Because he got a fluke win. You can come back to it. But it tells a story. And the story continues when Strong bails out of the ring and he's down and he has his arms up, but his back is up against the apron. And Loomis comes out from nowhere and locks Strong in a submission outside of the ring. So now he brings him down basically where Loomis is sitting, and Roderick Strong is kind of laying across his lap, and he's holding the submission. He will not let it go. And Adam Cole and Bobby Fish come back out, and Bobby Fish and Adam Cole are punching and kicking at Loomis's head. He's not selling anything. It seems like he's in a trance, like a murder trance, like you know, like you do. And he will not let it go. And Adam Cole is kind of backing up for a big super kick. And weirdly, the Velveteen Dream comes out. And he attacks Fish and Cole. He throws Cole over that barricade. And he takes out Fish again. And Dream goes to the top rope and jumps from the top rope outside the ring over the apron onto the floor onto Adam Cole with an elbow. Ow for both guys. Super duper ow for both guys. Adam Cole for his chest, Dream for his hip. And so that was, I haven't seen that before. That was really cool. I don't understand though if we're doing Loomis and Dream versus Strong and Cole, or if we're still doing Adam Cole and the Velveteen Dream. I wouldn't think so. He beat Dream, and that feud didn't have heat. I don't know. We'll see what they're going to do with it, but more importantly, Dexter Lumis still has that submission hold locked in. He's still sitting, and he's still just staring straight ahead. And by the time everything cuts from Velveteen Dream, Lumis is now sitting, petting Strong's unconscious head, which is sitting in his lap. And he's just got this weird, kind of wide-eyed look on his face. I don't know. I don't know what that means. From Dexter, I can't read this guy. But I like it. I like it a lot. Took me back. Took me aback, rather. Scared me a little bit. Which, you know, that's the point. And I know a lot of wrestling characters are just fabricated. But I've heard, and I'm sure you've heard, best wrestling characters are your real personality turned up to 11. So what the hell is Dexter Lumis at a 5? You want to see that? Because I don't want to see that. I'm going to bunker. You know you cannot come in. Find your own. That was so creepy and so great, and I loved it. And I want Dexter Lumis to be in every match on every show. That's NXT, Raw, SmackDown, all the pay-per-views. I want him to be at WrestleMania in every match. I want him to go to AEW and pull double duty there. And what? Sincerity, I hope that they don't overuse him, because this is the kind of gimmick similar to The Fiend, where because you love the character, Matt pointed out on the Money in the Bank preview that you want to see less of him because it keeps it special. And I hope that that's what they're going to do with Lumis. If this were the main roster, I would have no faith in that. Because it's NXT, I do. And that was a fantastic segment. Set it up well. I don't know if we're going to be doing a tag match here, or if he's going to get another chance against Strong or another one of the Undisputed Era members. Seems like he's going to go through them. If Dexter Lumis is your next challenger for the NXT title, I'd be fine with that. The story is set up in such a way where he can be. And during the break, Tozawa is in the parking lot. Looks like he's maybe walking to his car. When a car pulls up and Phantasma's in the ring, or rather in the car, and he pulls up and gets out, and he daps up Tozawa and gives him a hug. And he was speaking Spanish. He speaks English as well, but he was speaking Spanish here, and from what I got, he said that you're crazy, man, and they're laughing, and they hug, and Tozawa says thank you. And Phantasma gets back in the car, and Tozawa is attacked again by the masked men who pulled up in their own car. And Phantasma, because they're up against the driver's side door, Phantasma, who suspiciously waits a second before getting out, moves over to the passenger seat, gets out, and he's about to attack, but they run away and drive off. So it seems like Phantasma is their leader. I don't know if Phantasma is actually their leader, or it would make sense. They're masked, he's masked. I don't know if it's going to be Drake Maverick who's their leader. I don't know. Because with WWE, this could be that Phantasma is the leader, and that's what they don't think people realize, or they're just setting it up like he is, which they've done in the past a lot, and it's really somebody else. And I can't tell, but for the story they're telling right now, Phantasma's clearly the leader, as far as just looking at it on a surface level. So we'll see. I like this little wrinkle where Phantasma is kind of sort of appearing to be a guy who's trying to help and all that, but doesn't seem like it. And Drake Maverick and Kushida is next. And they're out, and Kushida dominates this match. He dominates early. Maverick's earlier promo called Kushida the best cruiserweight in the world, and this story makes sense. And Drake basically said, "I'm tired of doubting myself." He said, "I either can win by pinfall, I can win by submission, but I'm not exactly Bret Hart out there, am I?" And he says, "So all I can go out there and do is win. It's simple." And I would 100% love this story if it weren't gross. Remember how I said it was gross? Still gross. But it is giving Drake Maverick an opportunity to showcase himself in a way that they didn't let him do before. And either he's going to move on with WWE in NXT and be a completely different performer than he was. He's a great manager. He's a great general manager. But he's also a great wrestler. Or he's still released, gross, and he gets to move on to Independence or Impact or Ring of Honor or AEW, and he's got a higher profile because now you've seen him in the ring again. And so, like I said, Kushida's dominating, but there's a hint of Kushida is hitting him, but he's taking pauses after he hits him. And part of the story here is that these guys really care for Drake Maverick and want to see him do well, and Kushida is torn between the fact that he wants to move on for the title, but he doesn't want to take this guy out a little bit. And Jake Atlas appears at ringside. They say he's doing some scouting of his possible next opponents. I like that detail, and it sets up well for what's going to happen in the finish. And Kushida's getting that. He's stomping on the arm, and the ref comes over and asks Maverick if he wants to stop the match. Drake's yelling, "We're not stopping it!" And then Kushida goes to the top rope. Maverick climbs up, and Kushida hits that double wrist lock on the arm. And the ref this whole time is still asking, even when he was in the double arm, if he wants to give up. And Drake is just yelling, "We're not giving up! We're not giving up! No! We're not stopping it! We're not stopping it!" That was really good fire from him, even when he was in the submission. And while they're on the top rope, Drake comes down, and then he jumps back up to the top rope. He goes to hit the top rope bulldog, but because Kushida's a ridiculously good wrestler, Kushida kind of lands on his backside and catches him in an armbar position, and Drake is able to clasp his hands together. Drake gets the quick roll-up and wins. And so Drake Maverick is not dead yet. And Byron Saxton comes out. Good to see him. I like this role for him as an ambassador, kind of a fill-in kind of general manager for William Regal, and he says that he just talked to William Regal. Jake Atlas is in the ring now at this point as well. He says it's going to be the three of you next week, and the winner moves on to the finals because you all have the same record. It's important. Mark that down. Now, Drake Maverick, Kushida, and Jake Atlas all have the same record, so they're going to have a triple threat match to see who goes to the finals from Group A to face the finals from Group B. And as it was presented with his win earlier over Tozawa, Phantasma at 2-1 is the winner of Group B. The weird part is that with that loss, Akira Tozawa also moved to 2-1. So it kind of seems like there should be a rematch between Tozawa and Phantasma, then, if the records are tied and you have to redo it. But you know, what do I know? That's fine. I love that Phantasma moved on, and that triple threat match is going to be so good. That's going to be the match of the week next week, and it's going to be great. And it seems like Jake Atlas is the guy who's going to win this whole tournament, but I really hope it's Drake Maverick, because still gross, but it's made me want to root for him. And I hope that he either wins this title or he stays with NXT. Maybe he's revealed to be the leader of the Masked Men, turns heel. He's been softening up some of his potential opponents. I don't know. But I hope whatever happens, we get a fantastic match, which we will with these three, and a great story, which we will with these three. And we'll see what happens. And then there's a Rhea Ripley promo. It's just a repeat of the same promo, literally, from last week. It's weird we could never cut another one, but whatever. She's still saying WrestleMania didn't go as she planned. Yeah, we know. Not as we planned either. And it's just, like I said, it's a replay. It's setting up her match that's coming up in a moment with Io Shirai. They flash a graphic that says Ciampa and Cross is official for NXT In Your House. That's going to be fantastic. And then Io Shirai, who should be your NXT Women's Champion, is out first. And then Rhea Ripley, who should still be your NXT Women's Champion, is out next. And boy, oh boy, they're having a great match. This was leading up to be a takeover quality match, a main event match, which it was, but it was really, really living up to it, where Io Shirai was angry at Rhea Ripley, and Rhea Ripley was mad at Io Shirai and Charlotte Flair. She's just mad at the world. And they're having a really, really, really good back and forth until... You guys, you're never going to guess. You guys, I'm going to give you five guesses. Pause it. Who do you think comes out to the ring? Five guesses. I'll wait. I'm going to stop you there. It's Charlotte Flair. Guys, it's Charlotte Flair. It's your NXT Women's Champion. Charlotte Flair's out. Charlotte Flair's here. And they're both distracted because, God forbid, we have a great women's match without her being a part of it in some way. It's weird to me that since Charlotte Flair has come here, and I want to preface this by saying I sincerely do not blame Charlotte Flair for any of this. I blame how WWE is trying to present her. That the only other women's match on this Hulu version of the show was the Mia Yim match where she won. And since Charlotte Flair has won the title, there's been very, 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 very few segments for the women on the show that did not include Charlotte Flair. And it really just feels like Charlotte Flair is not an NXT person. And when Charlotte Flair is the champion, or even when Charlotte Flair is on a show, the way WWE uses her, they don't just have her be one of the women. They have the women in Group B, and then Charlotte is Group A by herself. And that works for Charlotte just as a heel to present that. Hasn't worked so far on the main roster, according to a lot of fans, and certainly on NXT, according to me and a lot of people, that it just doesn't work that way. When you had Rhea Ripley as champion or Shayna Baszler, you had everybody coming for them. And there were still other feuds that were leading up to that. With Charlotte, it feels like every feud has to include her in some way, or even that we can't just get this match that essentially would have been a number one contenders match out without Charlotte Flair interrupting. And I understand, character-wise, why she did. Rhea attacked her last week, and maybe she wants to avoid Rhea and maybe thinks she has a better chance against Io, or maybe if she can get the match thrown out, she didn't have to deal with either. But it's still a great match that I wanted to see to the end that I didn't get a chance to. And that seems to be a pattern with the way they view Charlotte Flair. And again, they're both distracted, and I believe Rhea is thrown out and takes out Charlotte Flair, and Io Shirai rolls her back into the ring, and what do you know, Charlotte Flair comes in and big boots Io Shirai and then spears Rhea Ripley, because we, my dear fans, can't have nice things. Again, character-wise, I understand why she did that. Somebody took her out, she got in, got physical. I get it. I just don't like it. And I also get that we're setting up a triple threat match with Charlotte Flair defending against Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley. That's going to be a fantastic match. Please, oh please, oh please, give it to Io or Ripley. I don't even care which one. I really don't. Rhea Ripley is probably my favorite of the two. She's just super unique and intense. But I love Io Shirai too. You can give it to her. And then, again, this is not a reflection on Charlotte Flair. She is beyond fantastic. But WWE has a habit of jamming somebody down your throat. She's on Raw, she's on SmackDown, she's on NXT, she's on The Bump, she's on everything. And I'm good, man. And we're setting up a triple threat, it looks like. I'm fine with that. And Charlotte Flair stands tall with the NXT title, because of course she does to close the show. And Moro says, NXT is Flair country. No, sir, it is not. No, sir, it is not. And that is how we close the show. Like I said, this was a very good show from some points. I love the presentation of the Cruiserweight tournament. Last week seemed like it wasn't as important. This week seems like it's one of the most important things on the show. Loved Dexter Lumis. Loved setting up Mia Yim, Keith Lee, and Gargano and LeRae. Loved that. I liked most of the things on the show. I liked the Io Ripley match until there was interference. I like that the Masked Men story seems to be pointing towards Phantasma, but it really feels like it might be Drake Maverick. I loved a lot of this show, and it was a very enjoyable watch. Some weeks, like when I first took over and it was basically just promos, it's a little hard to get through in terms of formulating a show because you don't have a ton to talk about. This week, plenty to talk about. And then that means my time is almost done. I'm introducing a new segment just for this week, because I had an argument with somebody at work, and just to give you background, he hasn't seen the Friday movies, so, like, you know, how seriously do you take him, or, like, The Wire or Breaking Bad, so, like, how are you even a person, you know? But he was saying how much he liked Friends, and I was like, yeah, Friends is great, it's not, but have you seen Living Single? And he hadn't, because he's a bad person. And I contended that Living Single is Friends if it were good. Now, some of this is bias against Friends because I had a drama teacher in high school that was lazy and would often just put on Friends. She said it was a great example of how to block a scene with limited space, how to place people, how to have them facing, so on and so forth. What it really was is she liked Friends and didn't feel like writing a lesson plan for that day, so she had us watch Friends. So I had to watch it, and I didn't like it. But, like, you guys are with me. Living Single's better, right? Like, I need to know that you guys know that Living Single's better. By far. Friends if it were good. And I just, you know what? You guys let me know, because I'm sure that's right. You know, that's not even an opinion, that's just a fact. But I want to hear what you guys think. And as you know, you can find me on Twitter. I am ZachNXT, that's ZachNXT on Twitter. I've had a lot of great back and forth, not only with Ashley and Mare and Matt and DJ, all on Twitter, and it's been really fun. Not a large following over there, but a really, really fun following. And I want to encourage those who've already hit me up to continue to do so. If you have questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear me talk about on the show, whether it's NXT related, AEW, main roster, if you want me to go back over again next week, how Living Single's really, really much better, anything might end up on the show. Few of those things have. Otherwise, again, ZachNXT, ZachNXT, not only support me, support all the great people we have at this show. Our contributors, Ashley and Mayer, your host and godfather of this network, Matt, Aiden with your AEW content, everybody. We're a funny little family over here at the Unofficial WWE Podcast, and I've had a blast being a part of it. So, you let me know what you think, or any questions you have, comments on Twitter. But if not, for this week, I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic, as you always are. Great job with the consistency, by the way. Can't thank you enough again. I've been Zach. You've been great. Have a great one.